Future-Proof Extra from Newstalk.
Now, sometimes we just want to be left alone. It can be restorative and cathartic to leave a group and be left with your own thoughts. But it's important never to be left behind. And you'd imagine that social animals that end up on their own don't fare very well. What's in it for them anyway? Well, joining us on the program now is Fernando Racine. He's a PhD candidate in the Department of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology at Princeton. He joins me now. Welcome to the program, Fernando. I believe we're going to talk about slime today. Can you tell me what slime is? Because I didn't realize slime... I thought slime was sort of like a generic noun, but slime is a thing?
Yes. Well, technically, we will be talking about slime molds, not any slime. In particular, we're going to be talking about the cellular slime molds, which are a subcategory of slimes.
And these are single-celled amoeba that on their own are not slime, but when they get together, they become slime. Can you explain this process?
Yes. So what we're discussing here are the lions of the subsoil, the most fearless predators of the underground. These little single-celled amoeba, they live in the soil and they eat bacteria. And while they're predators, while they're hunting down bacteria, they are single-celled. But when they starve, when they run out of food, then they activate this developmental program, they chemically talk to each other, and they organize an aggregation. These cells signal to each other that they're starving, and they all stream together and create this multicellular, slimy slug that then sprouts out of the soil, creating a stalk and dispersal spores. So that's their mechanism of going somewhere else.
So how did these single-celled amoeba move?
Well, a single-cell amoeba extends pseudopods. It extends projections of its cell that attach to the soil and it pulls itself forward.
They kind of look like feet but aren't feet. They're parts of the outside of the animal, right?
Yes, exactly, yes.
And so when they run out of food, so they sort of squidge along the soil. And when they run out of food, they sort of scream for help. And they say, I'm starving. And that triggers off, as you say, this program of communication amongst these amoeba, which is amazing. Take me through step by step exactly what happens.
Okay, so this is actually a multi-tiered conversation. Each cell has to understand that it's starving, so it has a bunch of internal chemical signals, and then it's going to put out signals that are going to tell its neighbors that are starving, and that they're going to try to, first they have to understand they have neighbors, so they're going to have a quorum sensing. They're going to just start shouting out, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here. Then they have a second level, once they know that there are cells around them. They're going to say, I'm here and I'm starving. They're going to put out a second level of chemicals. Once that reaches a certain concentration, they're going to activate another layer. They're going to say, well, I'm here, I'm starving, come here. They're going to secrete attractants. And these attractants are going to produce this cascade where all the cells are going to concentrate in a single point. And then they're going to stick together and form the slime.
Okay, so before we go any further, what if there's only one amoeba that's starving and everyone else is fine? Is this a sort of a domino effect? If one says it's starving, do they all then suddenly rally around? Or does there need to be enough people saying they're starving before this activity happens?
There has to be enough. So it's a conversation. These cells build upon the signals that other cells are putting out. So a cell by itself can't really activate the whole process.
Okay, and so there is no leader or hierarchy in these cells. It's not as if one is directing the others. It just emits a chemical saying, firstly, that it's there. Secondly, that it's hungry, and thirdly, come over here.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's the way it works.
So if it's starving, why would it be beneficial for this weird slime mold to bring everywhere to the place where there isn't food?
Yeah, so here's the thing. A single cell, if you're starving, you have to get out of there. There is no food there, right? Or at least there's a very small amount of food. And you have to move out. But a single cell can only move so much with its own motive force, pulling against the soil grains. But if they all come together, you actually create the slug that has a flowing motion. So together, they can move way easily, way more powerfully than a single cell.
And so they sort of slide on top of each other to move to another place where there's more food?
Yes, that's the idea. They first slide on top of each other, and they create this collective motion that allows them to move way more than a single cell. But most importantly, when they form this, they actually sprout out of the soil, and they extend above the soil, creating a stalk and suspending spores that are now projecting upwards, where other bugs can pass by and carry those spores to a different location.
How big is this stalk of single-celled amoeba?
Well, so now it's no longer a stalk of single-celled amoeba. Now they've aggregated, so it's actually a macroscopic organism. For the protozoan standpoint, it's gigantic. You can see it with your naked eye. It can be as big as maybe, I mean, enormous, like the Eiffel Tower of microbial systems, up to 2 millimeters, gigantic.
Okay. So, I mean, that is extraordinary because we are talking about a single cell organism that manages to structure itself in this sort of communications tower of cells. Yeah. Why does it do that? It does that because it can be brought to new places, much like birds distribute seed. Birds and other animals, wind, water, and so on, may brush this the amoeba off to new rich pastures. Is that the idea?
Yes, but instead of birds carrying seeds, we're thinking about maybe beetles and ants carrying these spores to different regions. Yes.
Now, that's all very well for the amoeba on the top. They're the ones who get seen. They're the ones who have contact with the things above them. But underneath, there's a large stalk of amoeba who basically get overlooked. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. So the cool thing about this, and this is why we call this a social amoeba. It's a social behavior because a portion of the amoeba will get carried away and inseminate a new location. But about 20% of the cells sacrifice themselves. They kill themselves, creating the structure that elevates the spores, right? So you have this collective behavior where you call all of your neighbors to build something, but 20% of you aren't getting there.
Hmm. It reminds me of bees and how many bees spend their whole lives working, servicing the queen, and don't get to reproduce, this sort of life of sacrifice. How do the slime mold amoeba decide who gets to fly away and who wither and die on the stalk?
Now, this is a very, very cool comparison, in particular because when you think about the bees, all of the bees are daughters from the same queen. So we'd say that this is a system that has a very high relatedness. So in a sense, you can say that these bees are sacrificing themselves for their sisters, which makes some kind of genetic logic in a sense.
Yeah.
However, these slime mold cells aren't necessarily sacrificing themselves for their sister cells because they were having this conversation. So they call all the cells that are around. So they might be sacrificing themselves for strangers, actually. Cells that are unrelated to them because they just aggregated everyone that was around. Turns out, in order to make that decision, they have to communicate more. They're going to have a chemical conversation, and they're going to allocate some cells to become spore cells, which go ahead, and some cells that become the stalk cells that die.
Right. There's sort of a flipping a coin to see who goes to the front line and which generals get home to direct the army, so to speak.
Yep. But rather than being just a coin flipping, it's more of a dramatic conversation using molecules. So one of them is going to put out more chemicals saying, "I'm a healthy cell, I have to go." And the other one might yield to that, or it might just play deaf and say, "You know what, I'm becoming a spore, it doesn't really matter what you say." So they're going to try to convince each other chemically in a very algorithmic way to become the stalk.
All right. That seems like a big claim. How do you possibly know that?
So what some people have done is that they have taken all of these different genotypes of cells that come from the soil, and they mix them together. And what you see is that when you mix different types together, you change the ratios of cells that become stalk cells and cells that become spore cells. So you're able to have types that are disproportionately influencing others to die, actually. Furthermore, we have the whole community that studies this has identified genes that are responsible for this conversation.
Like when you look at the stalk cells and the spore cells on the top, are they physically different in any way? Do you see any health or life issues with them, or do they look identical?
That is a point of much contention. They are, in a sense, identical. But there are people that sustain that there's a difference in nutritional status between the cells, so that the healthier a cell is, the more likely it is to become a spore cell.
Right.
And if it was starving a little bit more, then it ends up in the stalk. But in general, that isn't a rule necessarily. And it really is a dynamical process. So if you have only cells that were well fed, you're still going to have some cells that end up in the stalk, and you're still going to have some cells that end up in spores.
Yeah.
And it's usually always 80% spore and 20% stalk. So there's a well-regulated process.
So there's two main roles that ensure the survival of this system. They are the cells that get the raw deal and create this stalk that essentially die on the cross. And then there's those who sit atop the stalk and get to be brought to new lands where they can eat and reproduce and start all over again. What's really interesting about these amoeba is there's a third type of cell that doesn't contribute to this procedure that essentially ensures the amoeba survival. And you call them loner cells. What are these loner cells and why do they exist?
So that's the cool thing. Because people were studying the collective behavior, they were so focused on the aggregation and the stalk and the spore formation. And what we found out is that actually sometimes even half the cells ignore entirely the call to aggregation and they just stay behind. They remain entirely asocial. Those are the loner cells. And they decide simply not to join. They follow a different route to survival.
And what is that?
So instead of trying to get to a new spot trying to be carried away and find food, you can actually just hang around and wait for food to come back, wait for bacteria to regrow in the system. Now, here's the thing. If you had a bunch of cells, you probably don't have enough food for all of them. But if most of the cells are leaving the system, well, now actually maybe you're going to have enough food for yourself. You don't have to join. You don't have to run away. You can stay behind. And that's what the loner cells are doing. They found a way to survive that does not require the collective behavior at all. So the cool thing about this is that one of the strategies is very, very showy. So we pay more attention to it. But we're starting to realize now that these things that we think that are failures of communication are actually very important for the system to work.
Built-in fail-safe, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. Built-in, it's a way to not put all of your eggs in the same basket.
Hmm.
You don't want to like just take all of your cells and move to some undisclosed location. Leave some cells behind, right? It's a good strategy to do that. There are other examples in nature of systems that have this amazing synchrony, but you always have a couple of organisms that are just out of sync with the rest. You have bamboos that are flowering. When bamboos flower, they all flower at the same time. And turns out some bamboos are flowering a year off or maybe a couple of months off. And we're starting to see that this idea of looking at the loners, this idea that we first had looking at slime molds in the soil, actually is applicable to many other collective behaviors in many different systems.
It's hard not to sort of project feelings and emotions onto these single cells when you hear the struggle they go through to survive, isn't it? Really interesting stuff. Thanks for that, Fernando.